During this presentation, we want you to ask yourself the following question. Does your organization offer services or plan to offer services that fit some of the demonstration projects and pilots in the healthcare reform bill? There are 5 pilot projects and 30 demonstrations in the healthcare reform bill. Today, we are going to talk about the demonstrations that apply to long-term services and support providers. Now, why are the demonstrations in healthcare reform so important? In 1996, PACE, the Program of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, was still a demonstration. And in 1985, hospice was also a demonstration. These demonstrations worked and became permanent parts of our system. It is important that ASA members be a driving force for positive change to improve our long-term services system and not be on the sidelines reacting to permanent changes in healthcare reform. Let's go to slide number 7. On slide 7, the first demonstration is the Healthy Aging, Living Well Evaluation of Community-Based Prevention and Wellness Programs for Medicare Beneficiaries. The demonstration focuses on improving nutrition and levels of physical activity, reduced tobacco use, substance abuse, screenings and referrals for treatment of chronic diseases. This 5-year pilot provides grants to state health departments for screening and education for individuals 55 to 64 years old. There are also funds for evaluating evidence-based prevention programs for Medicare beneficiaries from the Administration on Aging and Chronic Disease Management Programs. Total funding is $50 million. The pilot will operate from 2010 to 2014. There is also a community transformation grant that allows national community-based organizations, state and local governments to receive grant funding to implement and evaluate comprehensive programs that will reduce the incidence of chronic diseases. The grant appears to focus on nutritional programs. So if you have an innovative program that concentrates on screenings and referrals with an emphasis on health and wellness, I would start by discussing this grant with your state health department and local area agency on aging. Now let's go to slide number 8. We have the Independence at Home demonstration. This demonstration establishes an incentive-based primary care and service delivery system that is driven by a spending target and a risk corridor for primary care to be paid for care coordination. They must provide home-based primary care in this demonstration. A home health agency could apply to be an Independence at Home provider as long as they offer physician and nurse practitioner services. I could also see a continuing care retirement community or independent living provider that has a geriatric clinic becoming an Independence at Home provider. This concept could also be combined with affordable senior housing as part of a house calls program. The Independence at Home provider must serve at least 200 eligible beneficiaries. To be eligible, the Medicare beneficiary must have 2 or more chronic illnesses. The Secretary of Health and Human Services will determine what chronic diseases have high costs, and these disease categories will be the major focus of the demonstration. They also want the Independence at Home provider to serve a population of Medicare beneficiaries who tend to have multiple hospital admissions and readmissions, as well as functional impairments. The government knows that the largest cost of care is on the acute side, so there is an emphasis on acute care in the demonstrations. This demonstration would begin on January 1st, 2012. The goal of the demonstration is to reduce preventable hospitalizations, prevent hospital readmissions, reduce emergency room visits, and improve health outcomes commensurate with the beneficiary's stage of chronic illness. This concept is already being done by the Veterans Administration, Montefiore Hospital in New York City, University of Pennsylvania, Boston Urban Medical Center, and ElderPAC in Philadelphia. On slide 9, The community-based transitions demonstration focuses on improving outcomes during transition periods for high-risk Medicare beneficiaries who have cognitive impairment, depression, a history of multiple readmissions, or any other chronic disease or risk factor that again will be determined by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. The phrase "will be determined by the Secretary" is written 1,045 times in the healthcare reform bill, which means that Secretary Sebelius and CMS will be very busy modifying some of these demonstration projects based on current needs and research findings. The community-based transitions demonstration states that the older adult or person with disabilities must have a minimum hierarchical conditions category score that will be determined by the Secretary in order to participate in this demonstration. So basically, they have a risk factor that they are using. This demonstration will begin January 1st, 2011. One service that they mentioned for this demonstration is medication review and management. Priority will be given to grant applicants that are area or state units on aging, or providers that operate in medically underserved and rural areas. I suggest that if you have an outstanding program that serves this population and are located in a medically underserved area, I would meet with your state unit on aging and local area agency on aging to discuss this grant opportunity. On slide 10, the hospital readmission reduction demonstration reduces the payments to hospitals. That's the DRGs, the diagnostic-related groupings, plus the adjustment factor for the hospital, who have poor readmission rates. There would be an exemption for small rural hospitals and sole community provider hospitals. The Secretary of Health and Human Services will determine which hospitals, those are the hospitals with the poor, high rates of readmission, will be participating in this demonstration. This demonstration will be a catalyst for hospitals to partner with home health providers and other long-term services and support providers in order to reduce readmission rates. This program will begin October 1st, 2012, and again, it's an opportunity for our members. On slide 11, the bundled payment pilot is a five-year demonstration that provides a bulk payment shared by a hospital, a physician group, a skilled nursing facility, and a home health agency. Payment during the pilot includes a bundled payment and bids by providers for an episode of care. Medicare beneficiaries who have hospital inpatient stays due to one or more of 10 specific chronic diseases would receive services through this pilot. For each episode of care, the bundled payment would cover the acute care hospital stay, primary care, home health, skilled nursing facility, and inpatient rehab services. An episode is defined as 3 days prior to the hospital stay, and 30 days after discharge. The demonstration will work on developing a patient assessment instrument and quality measures for post-acute care. The Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality will work with the Secretary of Health and Human Services to determine quality measures for this pilot. The quality measures must assess the patient's improvement of functional status, the rates of discharge to the community, reducing readmission rates to the hospital and emergency room, incidence of health-acquired diseases, patient perception of the care, efficiencies in care, and the person-centered care. There was a two-year CMS demo that already developed a care tool to improve post-acute care, and they may build on this previous demonstration. The pilot must not begin no later than January 1st, 2013. You should be meeting with your local hospital concerning this pilot. Again, the majority of hospitals do not have the experience in care coordination in the community like ASA members do. They need long-term services and support providers to take the lead. This demonstration is an opportunity, or could be an opportunity, for your organization. On slide 12, The Medicare Shared Service Program is a 3-year program that would enable providers of services and supplies for Medicare beneficiaries to work together in accountable care organizations that cover a minimum of 5,000 Medicare beneficiaries. A group of physician practices that establish person-centered medical homes can also be formed to work with the hospital and long-term service to establish an accountable care organization. The accountable care organization is responsible for the cost and quality of the overall care. A hospital and physician practice are two organizations within the accountable care organization. However, home health and other long-term services and support providers are an important part of this process. Again, physicians and hospitals are not experts in providing community care coordination. The Medicare Shared Services Program encourages the use of telehealth and remote monitoring. The Medicare provider would still receive their fee-for-service payment, but there would be an additional payment that is based on expenditure benchmarks that will be determined by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Accountable care organizations will be sanctioned if they avoid caring for high-risk patients. They want to make sure that providers don't cherry-pick non-complex cases to keep costs low and maximize profits. This program must be implemented by January 1st, 2012. This is a good opportunity for home health agencies, all long-term services and support providers, as well as members who operate geriatric clinics. On slide 13, the Patient Navigator demonstration is a 4-year program grant that involves a provider who is paid to coordinate care for Medicare beneficiaries with chronic diseases. Funding is at $3,500,000. Home health nurses and social workers would be eligible to be patient navigators. This demonstration will be in place from 2011 to 2015. I know some ASA members who already have navigator-type programs in place. They would be prime candidates for this demonstration. This demonstration could be done by a CCRC or HUD Housing. It could be done by a home care provider or a home health agency. On slide 14, the hospice concurrent care demonstration is a 3-year demonstration that will involve 15 hospice providers that will combine home health and hospice provider services. This demonstration is an opportunity for hospice providers that also operate home health agencies. It could also be a way of merging palliative care services and end-of-life care. On slide 15, the Health Care Reform Bill establishes health homes to coordinate care for individuals with chronic diseases through an optional Medicaid state plan amendment. This will be available January 1st, 2011. Health homes are a team of health professionals that may include a physician's group, home health agency, and other providers. The patient must have at least 2 chronic diseases or a persistent mental health condition to be enrolled in a health home. They will be focusing on mental health, substance abuse, asthma, diabetes. Health homes will have to provide comprehensive case management, care coordination, patient and family support, and information and referral services. States can receive planning grants to initiate this program, and interested providers should discuss this program with their state Medicaid director. On slide 16, the Medication Management in the Treatment of Chronic Disease Grant Program has a licensed pharmacist that is part of an interdisciplinary team that will work with targeted individuals who are taking 4 or more prescription medications for the treatment of the chronic disease. It involves an assessment, an initial medication review, formulation of a medication treatment plan, initiating a medication administration therapy, monitoring safety and effectiveness, and providing education and training on the appropriate use of medication by the patient. They want to learn more about performance measures for medication management and treatment. There is no startup date in the bill for this demonstration. I see this type of program working in independent living, affordable housing with services, and even a continuing care retirement community. On slide 17, there is an evaluation on integrating care around hospitalization demonstration that will have states work with providers to target Medicaid populations based on diagnosis and or location within the state to improve their care and reduce hospitalizations. The state has to apply for this demonstration, although the state will need long-term services and support providers to implement this program. The demonstration will operate from January 1st, 2012 to December 31st, 2016. Up to 8 states will be chosen to participate for this program. It may be worthwhile to partner with your local hospital on this demonstration. You again should encourage your state Medicaid director to apply for the evaluation on integrating care around hospitalization demonstration. On slide 18, the Certified Electronic Health Record Grant Program for long-term care facilities is a 4-year grant program for long-term care facilities, and the program begins in 2011. The grants are to be used to offset costs related to the purchasing, leasing, development, and implementation of certified electronic health records technology and may be used for any computer infrastructure, including hardware and software, upgrading current systems, and staff training. Long-term care facilities that receive grants are required to participate in state-level health information exchange activities where available. The Health and Human Services Secretary is required to adopt electronic standards for the exchange of clinical data by long-term care facilities, including standards for messaging and nomenclature. $67.5 million will be made available to fund the electronic health record grants and 2 other long-term care grant programs to provide incentives for staff training and development and to improve management practices. On slide 19, the demonstration project for use of culture change and health information technology in nursing homes funds the development of best practices in skilled nursing facilities on the use of information technology to improve resident care. 1 or more competitive grants are to be implemented by March 2011 for not more than 3 years. The Act authorizes an unspecified amount of funding needed to conduct these demonstrations. Now, there are 2 new agencies that will foster healthcare reform within the system that you may be working with to implement your programs, and it's important that you know them. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation will be developed to help. One project they have is to develop a home health chronic care management demonstration. The center would also develop a new funding mechanism that will result in cost savings by improving coordination and managing care through newly established accountable care organizations. One of the methodologies available to ACOs will be the use of telehealth, remote monitoring, and other such enabling technologies. This new agency, and again, it's the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, will be launched on January 1st, 2011. The second new agency in our system is the Federal Coordinated Healthcare Office. This office will be working on improving the integration between Medicare and Medicaid services and promoting programs such as the Program of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, the PACE program. We will be emailing alerts to ASA members updates on information and requests for proposals from the health care reform bill as soon as they are released. For more information on the demonstrations, please go to the ASA website, Healthcare Reform Hub, asa.org/healthcarereform. Now let me turn it over to Robin, who will answer the question, why collaborate?
Thanks so much, Peter. I'm just breaking in to remind you that we will be taking questions at the end of Robin's presentation. And to ask questions, you can email townhall@asa.org. And that address is in the third to the last slide in the presentation. Thanks a lot. Now, Robin.
As you all heard, Peter did a great job of summarizing a lot of these programs. There is a lot of interest in healthcare reform focused on person-centered care, integration, and coordination. And the key here for those of you who are already engaged in these activities to a certain extent is to think about how you are going to collaborate in your community. And why do you want to collaborate? Well, the first thing is if you don't collaborate, you will not be at the table. I was at a meeting of the accountable care organizations on Monday, and I will tell you that right now those organizations are hospitals and IPAs and other physician groups. There wasn't one long-term care provider in the room, and with the exception of one or two of the presenters, nobody really referred to either home health or any of our continua of services. So if we aren't at the table, we are not going to be able to have a piece of this pie. It is really important for us to be proactive, in many ways, much more proactive than some of the other acute and primary care providers, because we will be lost and left out of this if we don't get to the table. We have a tremendous opportunity, as Peter said, to really be leaders in playing a major role today and tomorrow in shaping the future of care coordination and integration, but only if we collaborate and be very proactive in making sure that we are a major player in all of this. It is very clear that organizations without partners are not going to be competitive in this process. On the other hand, it is also clear, and the example of the ACO meeting was very, very clear to me, that the medical providers in particular need your expertise to be competitive. They frankly don't know what they don't know. They don't really recognize that in order to be successful and to not be sanctioned, they are going to have your kinds of skills and expertise to manage people in the community. People do not get their services in a primary care office. They get care, they follow compliance regimens in the community, and you need to be the folks that are the ones following through in the community to make sure these things work. The other thing that I think is so important is that with collaboration, you've got the opportunity for expanding your revenue streams. And as this money flows out from healthcare reform, you have the opportunity to get a piece of that money. And the only way to get a piece of that money is to be part of these demonstrations, because the money is going to come out either in a bundled payment or some other type of mechanism in which you have to be part of the apparatus if you're going to get some of those dollars. Now, the potential partners, if you look at the next slide 22, there are a lot of them. Obviously, one of the biggies is large healthcare systems, and many of these are already beginning to be poised to engage in a lot of these activities. One of the ones that we met at the ACO meeting was a Dean Health System in Wisconsin, which is in Wisconsin and a number of other states around the country. They are already poised to begin to put together an accountable care organization, medical homes, and some of the other coordinated care models. So if you are working already with a healthcare system in either your local community or your region, you need to be getting to them early on to figure out how you fit into their strategic plan for developing more coordinated models. If you're not working with an organization like that, you need to get to know them sooner than later in terms of being competitive and being part of one of these demonstration activities. In addition, as Peter was saying, there is a focus on home health and home care, And it is important if you are providing those kinds of services or if you can partner with one of those providers to become a sort of a competitive piece of the integrated and coordinated care models. The other avenues are certainly primary care practices. These PAs and other models are going to be really important for you as the community-based part of a coordinated care or integrated care program. Medical groups and clinics are also essential, and one of the areas that we know are going to be getting a lot of money, both through health care reform and federally qualified health and HRSA, are the federally qualified health centers. These clinics are in every community in the country, and they are serving a low-income population. So for those of you, for example, who are low-income housing providers, you need to be partnering with those federally qualified health clinics to actually begin to think about how you become a medical home for a large group, maybe up to 5,000 folks, who you might be able to serve in your catchment area. Other potential partners on slide 23 include, obviously, the hospitals are going to be key. And these are the guys who are going to need your help. I know because we've done some work with a lot of skilled nursing facilities looking at some transition tools that many of you are already doing education of staff in hospitals in order to help them transition people out. You have the skills, you have the expertise. Many of you are actually doing that for free right now. You've got to think about partnering with these hospitals, particularly around these bundled payment demonstrations, so that you can actually get a big piece of that pie. Post-acute SNFs are also, if you aren't one, they certainly are going to be a big piece of a lot of the post-acute activity, as are the AAAs, senior centers, and other entities that are in the community. And finally, you don't want to forget the naturally occurring retirement communities, of which you may be a part right now or where you can think about partnering, because that is a place where there is an opportunity for folks to really create accountable care organizations and other integrated models. So if you look at slide 24, there are a number of really important, I think, elements that you have to consider in exploring these partnerships. Number one, think local, but think beyond local. Think regional and think state, because things are going to be happening at all of these levels. So you should not limit yourself just to your local community. You might want to think about a regional approach. Secondly, you've got to build on existing relationships. If you've got some strong connections right now, get to them before these RFPs come out. I've said this before. The prom date is already set, and people are getting their dates right now. You need to find your date, and you need to get it way in advance of these RFPs coming out, because by the time they come out, you're not going to be ready. So you have to have a long planning time before you're really ready to be part of a demonstration proposal. You've got to sell your unique skills and your expertise to the partners. You cannot be a wallflower here. I mean, you've got to be aggressive and proactive in showing the rest of these partners what you have to offer. You also have to really think about the potential for interoperability, not only of your information systems, but also of your staff, because a lot of these demos are focused on care coordination and integration. That means your staff is going to have to be able to work with other providers in other settings. And also think about the potential for risk sharing as well as shared returns. Do you have the capacity to risk share and to think about how you structure payments so that you get part of the return? Ultimately, we're really talking about thinking out of the box. So how do you prepare for these demos? On slide 25, obviously, you got to watch out for the pilot demo announcements. And as Peter said, ASA is going to be very active looking at the scheduling and trying to get out information in a very timely fashion. But I would recommend, having been through this myself many times, that you have to be prepared way ahead of time. For some of these demos that are scheduled to come online in the next year or two, they are already putting it together. So you've got to get to the potential partners in your community or your region quickly. You've got to review your strengths and weaknesses. Some of you are not, frankly, are not going to be able to be part of a demo. Not everybody will be able to do this. It is a lot of responsibility and a lot of accountability. So you've got to look and see whether you are really prepared for this, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. I would suggest that you begin to explore these various partnerships, and you may even want to establish memoranda of understanding right now with some of the most promising partners so that you begin to develop trust and commitment, because I can tell you what's going to happen. Partners are going to be shopping around, and they may tell you one thing, but they may be offering the same deal to other providers in the community. So an MOU really begins to set out the arrangements and developing a sense of trust and commitment that you want before you stick your neck out too far. The other thing that I would say is please include relevant staff in all discussions. The worst thing you can do as a CEO or an upper management person is to commit yourself to one of these demos and never have said a thing to your frontline staff. At the end of the day, they are the people that are going to have to implement this. It's not you. So you need to include all of your relevant staff from the beginning. So let's quickly go to the questions that you need to ask about participation in a demo. There are really sort of three areas that I think are key. The first one is, do you have the capacity to participate? Do you have the financial resources? Do you have the trained staff? Do you have an IT infrastructure? Many of these demonstrations are going to require that you share data across systems. If you are on a total paper trail right now, you probably are not ready for being part of these demos. On the other hand, there is going to be a lot of work in developing data infrastructure. So you really have to see sort of where you are. The other thing is you've got to figure out whether you have the capacity to serve the kind of population volume that is going to be required for these demos. We're not talking here about serving 20 people. We're talking about large volume. And can you really be a part of that? The second question is, what is in it for my organization? Do I really want to do this? And I think you need to think about, what is the potential for new revenue streams? What is the potential for new community recognition in your community or region? There's also tremendous potential for new clients through these demo activities, and also for the development of strong, lasting partnerships way beyond the demonstration effort. And finally, you need to ask the question, what is my past experience? You need to be thinking about what have been your successes in the past, and also what have been your failures, and how do you actually put those together in terms of thinking about your potential for being a good player. So finally, let me just conclude on slide 27 by giving you a little bit of a checklist for preparing for an evidence-based project such as this. You have to have a data culture. You have to be facile and comfortable with information, and at least you have to have some level of data infrastructure in place. You also have to have a staff that's comfortable with research and evaluation, because the demos are going to have some rigorous evaluation tied to it. And you are going to have to be answering questions, providing information on an ongoing basis. You also have to be open to building this research into your daily practice. You cannot think of a demo as just another project. It has to become part of the way you do your work. And finally, you have to be open to mid-course corrections. That is, can you quickly learn from your mistakes, and can you be facile and flexible in terms of even turning 180 degrees if you're finding that things aren't working? So I'm going to stop there and turn it back over to Barbara.
Okay, thank you both, Robin and Peter. And this has been so informative. I think what we've gained from both of your presentations is that collaboration on these projects is really essential, not only for us, but for the other provider types that are trying to get these demonstration programs off the ground. They may not even know yet that they need you. So often a view of healthcare is limited to doctors and hospitals. But you are the experts in providing services outside the hospital setting. For these programs to succeed, you have to be involved, but you may need to be the ones to take that initiative and really make sure that you're at the table. Before we begin on the questions that have come in, I just wanted to clarify a point with Robin, because you talked about the need for patient volume, as in the accountable care organizations. Is this going to be an issue for providers in rural areas where the elder population as a whole is not very large?
I think that, first of all, if you recall, there are a number of demonstration projects within healthcare reform that are specifically focused on rural and underserved communities. So there is a specific attention to the fact that the volume is going to be a lot more difficult to achieve in rural communities. And my guess is as they put more meat to the bones on these demos, they will be addressing those issues. The second thing, however, is that I think that one of the things for the rural providers to consider is, first of all, how do you partner both geographically but also virtually? And this is where telehealth and some of these kinds of technologies are going to be very key. How do you partner to be able to serve people over a very large geographic area? That is really going to be one of the keys. The other is, and I know that we have members right now who are actually part of hospital-based systems in rural communities. This is an opportunity for all of you to really create some of these organizations for rural. So while I think it's difficult, I really also don't think it's a tremendous barrier. And I think that healthcare reform folks and CMN is going to be very interested in rural models.
Great. Okay. The first question that came in is, can the faculty identify specific organizations that have or are developing affordable housing for seniors with an overlay of on-site PACE services? Does this type of on-site program appear to be perpetuated as a solution within the scope of healthcare reform?
Well, healthcare reform does promote services that services are delivered in a specific location. What matters is the quality and ultimately the outcomes of providing these services. Also, make sure that you define who you are targeting in affordable senior housing. It may be good to pitch this concept to the new Office of Federal Coordinated Healthcare.
Okay, great. Robin, do you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think PACE, senior housing provider partnerships are fit well within a number of these integrated programs. I think what's going to be really key here is how flexible you are in terms of meeting some of the requirements of these various demonstration models. And while there is some language in the statute, as the RFPs get crafted, there is going to be a lot of tweaks and turns in what finally comes out. So one of the things that I would suggest, if you are interested in that kind of model and having it fit within one of these demos, you need to be getting to one of those two offices or to any of the other folks who are going to be really responsible for writing the RFPs, because the language will get a lot more specific as they drill down into the details.
Also, to just mention some specific members, National Church Residents is moving towards the PACE with housing model, and also Cathedral Square has the PACE model as one of the participants, as well as Medical Home, Person-Centered Medical Home.
That's a great segue into our next question, which is, can you briefly explain what a medical home is? And then our member comments that from what I've seen, it doesn't appear to be all that innovative, but yet everybody is talking about it.
Okay. A person-centered medical home is a primary care practice that receives an extra payment from Medicare in order to provide coordinated care services. So it enables that extra payment. There's basically some strings attached that the primary care doctor and specialists have to achieve certain outcomes, some quality outcomes, and also cost outcomes. And if they achieve these outcomes, they're able to get an extra payment via Medicare for those extra services. It enables the primary care doctor to have a dietitian in the office or maybe a care coordinator or even work with outside long-term services and support providers.
I would just add a couple of things. I agree with you. This is not a new concept. The irony, of course, is that the geriatric model that was developed well over 25, 30 years ago is actually the original medical home. And those of you who are doing really good geriatric practice, which really consists of a primary care model that has an integrated interdisciplinary team, linking with a lot of other providers and really focusing on keeping people in the community, out of nursing homes, out of hospitals, is really the model. The medical home is a reinvention of that. Politically, it was really conceived because the primary care world was trying to find a new definition of itself. So medical home really comes out of a movement of primary care to create a new arena for themselves. I do think, however, that those of you particularly who have geriatric and gerontological expertise and have a very strong focus on interdisciplinary care should really be thinking about either partnering with local primary care practices or possibly even developing your own. So it is not new, but on the other hand, we've been around many times when it's old bottles old wine and new bottles, whatever. That's really what we're looking at with medical home, but that's where the money is right now.
Yep. The stimulus package had $100 million
okay.
to develop medical homes.
All right. The next question, are there pilot studies for programs that are trying to integrate mental health services into existing programs?
Well, the one pilot that I mentioned, the health homes demo, that was on slide 15, has a concentration on mental health. I can also see the medication management demo and the evaluating integrated care around hospital demo working for a mental health population. And the community-based transition demo also has mental health care coordination in it.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I would add is that in a number of these, depression is identified as a key chronic condition. So if you are thinking more broadly than just the chronically mentally ill as a population and more the generic issues of depression among the elderly, there I think is a lot of opportunity for expertise and skill in this area to be brought to bear on these integrated and coordinated models.
Okay. Our next question says, a current trend has been for organizations to downsize their skilled nursing facilities. Will the health care bill have any impact on this trend? For example, hospitals may be seeking opportunities to discharge more patients to nursing homes.
Well, health care reform should increase the Medicare rehab nursing role of skilled nursing facilities and possibly decrease the Medicaid beds or Medicaid role of skilled nursing, because states are being given more incentives to do Medicaid home and community-based services. Also, the move towards value-based purchasing will give our skilled nursing facilities an opportunity within healthcare reform to reduce readmission rates, which a number of the demonstrations focus on reducing readmissions.
Would bundling have any impact on that, Robin?
Yeah, I was going to say that probably the most specific of the demos is around the bundling, where the organization is given a bundled payment, and clearly with the move of hospitals to get people out and get them into either home health care or into a skilled nursing facility, there is going to be a lot more focus on that piece of the facility-based care. On the other hand, I would also say that there's going to be tremendous scrutiny of that bundled payment because the goal there is to really reduce hospitalizations and rehospitalizations. And so while we may see an increase in use of skilled nursing, not all skilled nursing facilities really have the capacity or the expertise to be doing the kind of care that responds to that.
Okay. Another question about skilled nursing facilities, how can they get around the anti-kickback and referral provisions of fraud and abuse laws when partnering and risk sharing with hospitals?
Well, actually, we are looking at that right now because it is a touchy subject. But the bottom line is patient choice. And I mean, the Stark laws still apply, and patients have to agree to participate in the demonstration project. And if they become permanent part of Medicare, the individual would have to agree to be in the medical home. They would have to agree to be in the accountable care organization and use the services within the accountable care organization. So I really feel that person-centered care connected with patient choice is really the key to I hate to use the word get around, but to deal with the anti-kickback and would cope with the struggles of the anti-kickback and referral provisions.
If I could add to that, the intent of these demos is actually to do exactly the opposite, because the incentives are going to be in a different place. You're going to get either a bundled payment or some type of fee-for-service payment, but it will be tied to all of the partners working together most efficiently and effectively to reach the goals. Otherwise, you don't get the payment. So kickbacks and referrals would no longer apply in this situation, because you're developing a new model of service delivery. And that really is the purpose of demonstration authority.
Right, and it would seem to me also that if you're involved in a demonstration program that's being monitored by, for example, CMS, that would tend to kind of protect you against being accused of price fixing or whatever. Another question on kind of the shadier aspects of demos. Our member wants to know, I heard that most of these demos are already wired, that provider organizations that are currently doing these made sure that their demo is in the bill. Is that true?
Some of them, I think, are wired. However, there's a lot of money in these demonstrations. And from just my experience last week with the Accountable Care Organization meeting, there are many, many providers that are thinking and positioning themselves. So it is by no means wired to just a small set of organizations. It is very clear, however, that the language in many of these demos was written in a way that there are probably only certain types or classes of organizations that are going to be able to apply for these, because you have to meet the requirements, which is why it is so important for you, as you position yourself in the community of ours, that you really take a look at your own expertise and your capacity.
Peter, would you have something?
Well, some provider groups did have an early Christmas present from the demonstrations. However, I find that a number of the demonstrations come from MedPAC Commission report recommendations to Congress that have been around for the last couple of years. So it is coming out of research that MedPAC did on how to improve our Medicare system, how to decrease costs and improve quality.
Okay, I would just interject something too. Having worked on Capitol Hill for a while, it may well happen that an advocacy group got a project authorized in legislation. However, the process is still competitive to be able to participate. And I think it also goes to Robin's point. You know, provider groups may have gotten their pet project into the bill, but they still need your involvement, and they may not even know that they need you. So there are still opportunities for you to be involved, even if, you know, people are already working on a project that's authorized under the bill.
Yeah, if I could just use an example. And I don't know who's on the phone here, but we've been doing a little bit of work with Geisinger, which is a health system in central Pennsylvania that also has a PACE program and is working with Presbyterian Senior Living, and has just gotten a Beacon Community Grant, which is they're going to be creating a very large regional HIE, health information exchange. And yes, they have been working on these things, but on the other hand, their coordinated models are not set in concrete. So there's a lot of opportunity to work with organizations like that to shape a demo that will fit within the language of the RFPs that are going to be coming out. So I think it's mostly important to know who the players are in your community. The other is to get to your states. because the reality is some of these demos are going to go through the states. And the states, if they don't apply, then you're not going to have any opportunity. So one of my suggestions is you need to get to your state affiliate and work with the state associations to make sure that the state is on top of potentially responding to some of these RFPs and that you are a part of it.
Okay, and I think we had another question, probably for Peter. Any particular demo you might envision for ADHC? For example, working with a medical home or health homes?
Actually, for adult day health programs, because you have the interdisciplinary team in place, there are a number of demonstrations that are in healthcare reform that would apply. The patient navigator program, I could see that working. The plan of care in the adult day program is basically navigating the patient within the system. The medication management program, if you have a large dementia population, the evaluation on integrating care, focusing in on assuring that person with dementia is receiving care and basically reducing readmission rates. So the bill doesn't, for most of the demonstrations, they don't specify a particular provider type. So I think adult day healthcare providers should apply.
Okay, great. And now we have a question for Robin. What steps should organizations take to ensure they sufficiently document creation and implementation of a demo project in a way that can be codified through HHS regulations so as to ensure future support of that program design beyond the demonstration period?
I think that's a good question. I guess I'm not sure how much room the potential demo entity has in codifying right now, because you're going to be required to document very clearly by the RFPs themselves. So the requirements, the information that is going to be needed in terms of creating the evidence base and documenting outcomes will come from the RFPs themselves. There's another process once demos are done, which is really much more of a political process in terms of becoming a permanent provider. Let's put it this way. The PACE program really didn't have that strong an evidence base when it became a permanent provider. It was really more the lobbying and the efforts of the advocates that got the PACE program to become a permanent provider. So I think at the point of being part of a demonstration, you're going to need to think about what are the requirements that the RFP is going to lay out. You need to meet them with the letter of the law, and your goal is going to be to try to create good outcomes. My sense is if you've got good outcomes, you have a better opportunity for arguing that you want to go beyond demonstration authority and actually become a permanent part of the system.
Right. Would you have any comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. As hospice is the same situation. There was a strong customer base, basically, that was lobbying for the program and believed in it.
I mean, I think the future, I think there's going to be much more attention to evidence base now than there was in the past.
Right.
Before, there was sort of a combination of consumer demand, advocacy, and sort of a heartstring association with things like hospice and PACE. I think now they are going to be looking much more at an evidence base, because these demos are designed to produce cost savings. But this is what they see as the way to begin to bend the cost curve for the Medicare and the Medicaid programs. And so there will be a lot more attention to outcomes than there have been in the past.
Yeah, so in other words, this is part of the theme of healthcare reform, which is actually to try to reform the delivery of services, basically. And a lot of work, as we've seen in some of our previous calls, a lot of work still has to be done on the regulatory end, writing the rules. And I think that's going to have a lot to do with the specific things that our members are going to have to do to participate in these demos. We've had a call come in just with another example of the location of PACE with housing, and this comes from California. There are four providers involved in projects of this kind. One is the Institute on Aging with Bridge Housing in San Francisco. Another is the Center for Elder Independence in Oakland. There is, of course, the venerable Onlock establishment in San Francisco. And then the Jewish Home of LA is planning a similar project. And then we also have the SOURCE program going on in Georgia, which also reaches into housing. So we can see that a lot of us members are already involved in this kind of activity.
And also Volunteers of America.
And Volunteers of America, too. So, okay. I think we've gotten to the end of the questions that have come in so far. Again, if you have questions in the future, there is contact information in the presentation. And you heard Peter telling about all the different effective dates that are applicable to these projects. We will continue to not only post information on the Hub page, but also as the RFPs come out, the request for proposals, we will be emailing members with that information and also putting it in for this week. And so we'll see you in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
The moderator has disconnected. The conference will now end. Thank you for using IDT Connect.